We're doing the Ein Yaakov on the Gemara and Brachot. And we were holding just when the page turns over to the Daled Amid Beis. I don't have an Ein Yaakov in front of me, but this is a basic summary based on the Gemara. So we're going to do the best we can without the text. And the Gemara continues, Kedetanya, as we have a Tana, quote, Chachamim asu siyag ledivrem. Our sages, this mine or yours?
Yours.
Our sages made a boundary to their words. Meaning, we know that Chachamim can institute different forms of decrees. They can make takanot, gzerot, siyagim. Siyag is like a fence. So they fence in their own words, they added a fence to. Kedei shlo yehe adam ba min hasadeh be'erev ve'omer, a person shouldn't be coming in from the field in the evening and saying, Erech leviti, I'll go home to my house. My house. People expect things from their house. At the end of the day, they want to come home to their house. That's what people want at the end of the day. Ve'ochal kima, I'll eat a little bit. Ve'eshteh kima, I'll drink a little bit. Ve'ishan kima, I'll drink a little bit, I'll sleep a little bit. Ve'achal kach, and then later, I'll get back up. Ve'kakeach ve'itpalel, I'll reach Shema and I'll pray the way I should. What's the first thing a person wants to do when he finishes his day at work out in the field? He wants to come home to his house to eat his food, drink his drink, and sleep in his bed. But I've been working all day. Oh, and then I'll go to the shul, I'll say my Shema, and I'll daven. V'chotavto shina, and what'll happen? Sleep will overcome him. Sleep will take a hold of him. V'nimtza yishen kol ha'layla, and I'll end up sleeping all night. You know, all those people who sit on the sofa and say, honey, I'll be with you in a minute. And then they start snoozing and they sleep the night on the sofa. So Chazal knew that that's what's going to happen. So what did Chazal say? Aval adam ba min hasadeh be'erev, when a person comes in from the field at night, nichnas lebet hakneset. First step, don't walk into the house, walk into a shul. That's the first step. We have guys who leave the machon and go to college and work. And I met a guy tonight. He said to me, I left the machon half-baked. I'm not yet ready to deal with... I'm working and I don't get learning in, and it's driving me crazy, and I don't know how to manage it both, the learning and the working. I don't have a set schedule and it's not working. Well, here Chazal gave us one of the key tips. If we want to get our learning in during the day, when we have that time, when we finished our work, instead of walking into the house, walk into the shul. When a person comes home, our sages instituted, he's coming back in the evening from the field, go into shul. If he's accustomed to reading Torah, Nevi'im, Ksuvim, he's not on a high level, but he knows how to read Torah. He could read an art scroll. He could read a little bit of the stories of Tanakh. Koreh, so read Torah. If he's used to learning a little bit of Mishnah, Shoneh, so he'll review a little bit of Mishnah. The Koreh Kriyat Shema, and then after he's learned a little bit, comes time for prayer, he'll say Shema with everyone. Umitpalel, and he'll pray. V'ochel piton, will come home and eat his bread, umvarech, and he makes a blessing. Notice, if we stay attached to the shul, then we keep moving up. He'll end up making a blessing over his bread. V'chol ha'over al divrei chachamim chayav mitan. Our sages ended this Tanakh quote with the following scary sentence. Whoever transgresses the words of our sages is obligated to get the death penalty. So the Gemara says, wait a second. Ma'ishna b'chol duchta. What's the difference that everywhere else, when our rabbis instituted something, the loktani chav mita, that the rabbis didn't say, and if you don't do this, you deserve the death penalty. Ma'ishna hacha diktani chav mita. Why over here do they end their words with this scary sentence that whoever doesn't listen should get the death penalty?
Because in Torah it says that you're supposed to listen to the rabbi of your generation.
Yeah, but that's relevant to every rabbinic institution. Why only here? If you want, one possible answer is mishum de'ikon es shina. Because here, they know you need an extra warning. Because sleep is ready to pounce on a person, and then he has no control. So they knew that if they don't warn him, hey buddy, you listen up, you better do this, and then chances are he'll go home. We have a lot of people who leave the machon, and unfortunately, there are a nice number who sink after they leave the machon. I see, because I get invitations to, like, people have automatic invite to all their friends in Facebook and all these things, and people list me as a friend. And then 3 months later, I get an invite to something that's on Shabbos. So I know this guy's going to a party on Shabbos, and I cry. And he, I feel bad for him. The guy left the machon, and today he's not keeping Shabbos. And a lot of guys stay in touch, and they come back, and it's and they tell us. Or there are guys who leave, and they stay in touch, and they say, you know, I can't last. It's not working. Well, one of the keys is stay in touch. When you finish your work day, if you walk back into a shul after your work day, you learn, it doesn't matter what. A little bit of chumash, you come 5 minutes before davening. You keep moving forward. You keep moving forward, you don't digress, you don't regress. Yeah?
Have you ever seen the movie The Big Lebowski?
No.
Oh,
okay. Why was that?
The guy from the movie, you always catch a butt. And like, the rest of the week was just outrageous, and like, he was just this like, dirty, dirty guy who just went bowling every day, and he kept like swearing, I'm sure my job is like, leave me alone, I don't drive on Shabbos. Anyway, sorry.
No. That's something we once had a guy who was leaving the machon, and he told me, we sat down just before he left, and he said, I'm not ready to keep anything yet. I'm not going to keep Shabbos, I'm not going to keep kosher, I'm not going to keep anything. But it was nice. So I said, look, if you're not going to keep anything, so what do you want me to say? So he said, I don't know, give me some thought. So I said, look, if you're telling me you're not ready to keep this or that. This was a guy who came from a house where they didn't keep anything. And he was in the machon for a very, very short period. I mean, he came for a few weeks, and he wasn't ready to keep anything. He came, like, to see what it's all about. But he... What? Oh, well, maybe you do, maybe you don't. But he never kept anything beforehand. So when he came, he learned a little bit about certain things. So I said, look, there must be one thing out of everything you saw at the machon that you connect to. If you're telling me you're not ready to keep everything, so I'm very sad for you, I feel bad, and I hope one day you will. But for today, at least think of one thing. Take one thing, and that work on, that'll be your mitzvah. Work on that. And this is a Hasidish concept, that if we can connect to one mitzvah, then that one mitzvah will drive us to the other mitzvot. And every person should try to have in his life a certain masechta, either in Mishnah or in Gemara, that he's connected to, that he knows that's my masechta in life. The Medrash tells us that there was once a man who used the chazer maseches chagiga over and over and over again. Now, chagiga is about the sacrifices that are brought on the holiday. They weren't relevant in the time of Gemara, and they haven't been relevant for a few thousand years now. So, okay, thank you. So this man, he used to learn chagiga. And he sat alone at home, and he learned it again and again and again and again. And then the day came that he passed away, and no one knew he passed away. And he's alone at home, he was learning his chagiga, and he passed away. And he's lying there dead, and suddenly a woman starts wailing and wailing, and people in town hear her, and they come. And they find her over this dead man. And they say, oh, we didn't know this man passed away. Who are you? So she says, my name's Chagiga. And they never saw her before. And after they took him to burial, they never saw her again. And the rabbis realized that this was the masechta that came after he on his own went and put his time again and again and again to review Chagiga. So the masechta came in the form of a woman to tell everyone he passed away. So every person's supposed to adopt the masechta. You know, there's in the United States, adopt the highway, right? So in Judaism we say adopt the masechta. Every person's supposed to, if you can't do it in Gemara yet, do it in Mishnah. Doesn't have to be the biggest masechta. It could be a small masechta. Chagig isn't very big. It could be a small masechta. It doesn't matter. There should be one masechta which is yours that you review and you review. It could be Makkos. It's a small masechta. Megillah, Tanis. Doesn't matter which. I think that a person should strive to reach a point where it could be a masechta in Gemara. But I think it's good to start with a masechta in Mishnayos. It's definitely good. But the key in all of these things is consistency. Hatmada. We all start. We all know how to start very, very well, many, many things, especially men. Men are very good at starting things. It's women that can hold on to something for 9 months and develop it and cultivate it. And we have the tendency, we can start a million things. We can start a lot of things, right? How many home improvement projects does the average man start in his life? As many Sundays off as he has. We all start things. But to finish, that's where it takes consistency, and that's something we have to train ourselves for. So our Gemara over here told us many, many things. Told us that people very often can make the same mistake time and again. You think, if I come home day after day, and I say, I'm just going to eat a little, drink a little, sleep a little, and make it back to shul, well, can have 1 day, 2 days, 1 week, 2 weeks. You think by the second week I'd catch on, this isn't working. We don't work that way. If Chazal wouldn't step in and say, gentlemen, you're not walking into that house, go to shul, because otherwise you're not going to make it to prayer, we'd make the same mistake time and again. That's our tendency. Look at how many times we oversleep. We get up late and we still can't get to bed on time. Look at how many goals we set for ourselves every year before Rosh Hashanah, and then next year we find ourselves setting the same goals all over again and adding and then some. So we that's one of the things we have to recognize, the wisdom of Chazal, that they could see our faults and they could tell us, do this and listen up, do it or else, do it. And Chazal explained to us. Chazal said, otherwise you're not going to do it. And once a person enters shul, he has a better chance of living up to all this. The Rebbe from Satmar wrote a letter. I haven't yet learned the Rebbe from Satmar's works. But Rav Halberstam Zatzal had this letter hanging in his office when you sat waiting to meet him. So this was a letter he had hanging for all the people who came to ask him. And in the letter he says, don't listen to your Yetzer Hara. Person's Yetzer Hara tells him, you'll learn well at home. Sit down and learn. What's wrong? Take out a sefer at home. And it's worth going out that door, putting on your coat, going all the way to Beis Medrash, all the time it takes. Because in Beis Medrash you learn. And at home, we all have 1,000 things to distract us. So Chazal didn't say, come home and take out a sefer and learn a little bit. Chazal said, no, go to shul. And once you enter shul, you'll take out whatever sefer you used to learn, you'll learn. And then you'll pray the way you should, and then you'll end up eating the food the way you should. Amamah. We said earlier, Korek Kriyat Shema Mitpalel, that when one enters shul, he'll read Shema and then pray the evening prayer. Now we had two great sages, Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, whose full name was Rabbi Yeshua ben Lakish.
Is Rabbi Yochanan the one with the destruction of the second temple?
I know this.
There was Rabbi Yochanan who made all the institutions after the destruction of the second temple. Yeah. So Rabbi Yochanan, his brother-in-law was Reish Lakish. We're not going to learn about Reish Lakish tonight. We're going to learn about Rabbi Yochanan. And the person who he's arguing with is Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Not to be confused with Reish Lakish, Rabbi Yeshua ben Lakish. And they had two differing opinions as to how we're supposed to read Shema. Rabbi Yochanan said that we're supposed to do it the way we do it today. We do halacha like Rabbi Yochanan. We read Shema and then pray. The Shema leads us into prayer. And the Jerusalem Talmud Rashi quotes over here explains that the idea is that the Shema brings us close to God. The Shema is like knocking on a door by our Creator. We're coming close, we're saying, God, you saved us, you rescued us from Egypt, you took us out against all odds, you did the great miracles, you showed that you love us, that we're your children. And that's like a lead-in to prayer. Person who says Shema very nicely, and he's got to run, he doesn't have time for Shemona Esrei. The Yerushalmi says it's like a person who knocks on the king's door and then runs away. So how many times is a good king going to have patience for such a shenanigan? There's a limit. It's better the way we do it. We prepare, we come close to Shema, and after Shema we say the blessing that describes how God split the sea for us and all the miracles God did in taking us out of Egypt. And that leads us into Shemona Esrei. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says, no, works differently. After you finished your last prayer, after you finished Alvit, Ma'ariv, only then do you say Shema. Meaning, are all the prayers sandwiched between the two Shemas? You begin the day with Shema, and then you say Shachrit, and then you end the day with the evening prayer, and then you end with Shema. So all the prayers are sandwiched between the two Shemas. That's called Filot Ba'en Tzatiknum. Our sages instituted the prayers in between the Shemas. Or, do we say that you're supposed to make Bisomech, Geula letvila, make the fact that we make mention of God's redemption of the Jewish people, adjoin that to our prayer. Somech, make adjacent the geula to prayer. So what did we just say in our Tanakh quote? one should read Shema and then pray. That's a support of Rabbi Yochanan's opinion. That Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan said, "Ezel ben olam haba." What does the word ben mean?
Son.
So the ben could mean son.
Between.
That's with the yud.
To.
Ben could mean belonging to. Ben could also mean of potential. We say bar mitzvah. He's got the potential. So Rabbi Yochanan says, who is ben olam haba? What does it mean ben olam haba?
Potential.
What? He has the potential, he has the worthiness, he's one of the groupings of olam haba. And we're going to have to take time, not tonight, to discuss what is olam haba. We started discussing in our Rambam class, and we had one definition, right? We got the one definition in our Rambam intro to Chelek. We have to discuss it at greater length. Maybe we'll take during Bein Hazmanim, if God will grant us time to learn together, then Mevacha maybe we'll be able to explore that one. So who is it that's going to get the world to come, a portion in it? That's a person who can adjoin his recounting of the redemption to the prayer of evening. Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi says, no, Tfilot ben Tzatiknum, the prayers were sandwiched between the Shema. Ben Maika Mifligi, what's their argument? Either they're arguing on the understanding of a verse or a logical argument. If you want, we could say their argument was in logic. Notice, which does the Gemara analyze first? Logic. We say logic preceded Torah. Logic, we say, is more powerful than Torah. How so? If we have a verse that tells us something that we should have been able to deduce from logic, the Gemara is going to ask, why do we need a verse? It's logical. We don't need a verse for things that we could have deduced with our own logic. So from there we derive that true logic, our logic is tainted. But true logic, what the Gemara calls Svara, that is even more powerful than a verse. We say, if something could have been deduced by using true logic, then why did the Torah have to say it? Lama likra Svara, the Gemara asks. So the first thing the Gemara is going to analyze is, what's the source, what's the logical source? Rabbi Yochanan's logic says, Gula me'utanami avit. The redemption of the Jewish people began in the evening. Ela gula me'alta lo avi atzafa. But the full redemption wasn't until morning. Why did the redemption begin at night? Because at midnight God hit the Egyptians. At midnight the Egyptians said, get out of here, we're all going to drop dead, we see this plague. The Egyptians didn't understand what was going on. Moshe told them the firstborns are going to die. They didn't know that all their wives were cheating and all the husbands were cheating. You know the joke. They have a shul where there's the rich shul and the poor shul, right? So the rich people's shul, every Shabbos they all drink vodka. And on Simchas Torah they have these huge kegs where everyone could drink like these free fountains of vodka. At the other edge of town you have all the poor people and they have their shul. So the poor people decided, at least on Simchas Torah, we should be like the rich people. How could we do it? Every person will donate one cup of vodka every Shabbos. And this way, when Simchas Torah comes, we'll have a few kegs full of vodka. And we'll be able to have a free fountain of vodka for Simchas Torah. Well, every week, everyone comes faithfully to shul with one cup of this clear liquid. And comes Simchas Torah, they open the fountains and everyone's drinking water. Everyone figured, if everyone else is bringing pure vodka, I could bring water, it'll be okay. Well, if everyone figures that, then you get water when Simchas Torah comes. So, by the Egyptians too, no one knew everyone else was cheating around. Everyone knew they were cheating around. Comes Makas Bechoros, and God knows who's the firstborn. So this guy, his wife thinks this is the first child he has. Really, he had a first child from someone else. That guy thinks it's his third child. Really, it's this guy's first child. It's not a third, it's a first for this guy. This guy thinks his wife bore him this child first. Really, she had three other children before she married him. She didn't bother telling him. So everyone's cheating on everyone. And suddenly, the kids they thought were firstborn weren't. The kids they didn't think were. So suddenly, people are dropping dead. And it doesn't match what Moshe told them. So the Egyptians start scrambling. They say, we're all going to die. What's going on? This is a plague that doesn't fit the books. Doesn't fit our understanding of the rule books. God said, I'm going to discern who's a real firstborn. Beyond what the Egyptians are telling you. I know the truth. So I'll kill the firstborns. The Egyptians suddenly see a lot of people dying, a lot more than they expected. So now they're scrambling. So at midnight, the Egyptians ran to the Jews and said, leave. And that's when the redemption began. Before midnight, the redemption began, because before sunset that day, the firstborns took up arms and said, let the Jews go. Why should we all drop dead tonight? And the Egyptians said, we're not letting go. So you had civil war in Egypt on the eve before Passover. So that's the beginning of the redemption. God said, tonight you're going out. The Jews are roasting the Egyptian god in their homes. They're making barbecues. That's the beginning of their redemption. So when do we signify in our prayers that the redemption began? Rabbi Shua ben Levi says the main redemption was the morning. The morning we got up, we left Egypt. That's the main redemption. So we read Shema adjacent to prayer. But the evening, it was just the beginning. Rabbi Yochanan says, yeah, but it was a beginning. It was a worthwhile beginning. So even at night, we want to make our Shema adjacent to prayer. That's still something worth mentioning as an introduction to prayer. So that's what Rabbi Yochanan says, even at night we say Shema before prayer. And Rabbi Shua ben Levi said, no, logic is, Kevin lo'avi ela mitzafa, being that the real redemption wasn't until morning, lo'avi gula ma'aliyata, that's not a good fitting redemption. Or else the source is a verse. And they both derived it from one verse. The verse equates when we go to sleep to when we wake up. It says you should read Shema b'shochtcho v'kumecho when you lie down, when you get up. Rabbi Yochanan said, just like when we get up, when we get up in the morning, we say Shema and then prayer. Then in the evening also, you say Shema and then prayer. Rabbi Shua ben Levi says, no, just like when we get up in the morning, what do? The first thing we do is Shema and only then prayer. And the Shema is adjacent to when we're in bed. Af Shchiva, so too at night, Kriyat Shema Sumuch L'mitato. You read Shema at the very end when you're about to go to bed. That's what Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi holds. I think that we're out of time. You guys have to head back for Arvit, no?
Yeah. We can just do right over at the end of the shul, yeah?